This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. We welcome questions. You can send them via email to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. Layla's our nutritionist in residence. She's got a master's degree in nutrition, which is an RD, registered dietitian. And she helps me field questions from our listeners. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good, good. Busy day in the office. We saw a lot of patients. Can't think of a better way to cap off a day than by answering listener questions.
Yeah.
Just squeezing a podcast. So before we get to questions, though, I think we have to give a nod to this important story. And it has to do with Roundup and glyphosate. And, you know, more broadly speaking, GMOs, because Roundup is actually a consequence of GMOs, of Roundup-resistant
crops,
where they can be sprayed rather indiscriminately with Roundup, and miraculously they survive, and the weeds are killed.
Yeah.
So a couple of problems with that. One is that, first of all, we're developing a lot of Roundup-resistant weeds, so that product is headed for the...
Nature wants to live.
Yeah, so it's becoming less and less effective, and you're needing higher and higher levels of Roundup to kill the bad guys. But we're concerned about glyphosate because, well, it's a...
carcinogen.
Carcinogen. And, you know, and first this was greeted with great skepticism by especially people who are proponents of deregulation and agribusiness and people in big food.
Yeah.
And
who only benefit from a product like glyphosate.
And it was actually purchased by Bayer, Monsanto, the company that makes it. So Bayer, ironically, inherited a big headache with Monsanto, because now there's all kinds of liability associated with it, because lawsuit after lawsuit is now being working its way through the judicial system, in which plaintiffs are alleging, and they're getting significant monetary awards for rare types of cancer that they're developing, particularly leukemias, unusual types of leukemias that are developing. Leukemias are characteristic of chemical exposure. Now comes news that not only are the effects of, by the way, when you, if you or I were to take a blood test or a urine test, or if you were lactating as a female and we were to check, you know, any number of body fluids, we would find detectable levels of glyphosate. We all have it.
It's ubiquitous.
Yes.
It's in our food.
Yes. It's in our water. It's in our environment.
Yes. Even as much as 25, even organic produce has as much as 25%.
So we can minimize our exposure by avoiding GMOs, but it's really been unleashed on the environment. And here's a really disturbing story out of Washington State University. Researchers see health effects across generations from popular weed killer.
Yeah.
So this is a new concept in biology and genetics, is that it used to be thought that there were two ways that things could mess you up. They could give you a mutation, that's relatively rare event, and that could be passed along.
Yeah.
Or the effects could be had, but only confined to one generation. You know, you could be killed by something, but it's not going to be passed along to your descendants.
Yeah.
There's this other thing now called epigenetics, which means that you can modify your genes without a mutation.
Mm-hmm.
You can tweak them, and that can be inherited.
Yes. You know? Pass so, along to generations.
So there's something in the Bible about the sins of the fathers are passed along to the sons and daughters for four generations. I think that's the Bible quote. If I get it wrong, some of you other biblical scholars can correct me. But that actually envisions the effects of some of these environmental chemicals. So the researchers have found a variety of diseases and other health problems in the second and third generation offspring of rats exposed to glyphosate. So descendants of exposed rats developed prostate, kidney, and ovarian diseases, obesity, and birth abnormalities.
Wow.
What a nightmare.
Definitely.
More than one-third of the second-generation mothers had unsuccessful pregnancies.
Oh, that, well, that's interesting.
Two out of five males and females in the third generation were obese.
Wow. That might explain a few things.
They call this phenomenon generational toxicology, and they've seen it due to fungicides, pesticides, jet fuel, the plastics compound bisphenol A or BPA,
yes,
the insect repellent DEET, and the herbicide atrazine, which is a dye. Well, I mean, which is actually, it's a dye, but it's also an herbicide.
And a lot of these can cause neurological problems as well. There was one in particular I remember. But, you know, it's not just BPA, it's BPS and BP, I believe it's H, that have replaced the A in bisphenol A, and they're just as bad, if not worse.
And this, a Washington State University study published in December, found state residents living close to areas subject to treatments with the herbicide glyphosate are one-third more likely to die in early death from Parkinson's disease. Also, study published by the University of Washington in February found the chemical increased the risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma by as much as 41%. So,
wow.
I think the evidence is mounting that this is bad. And, you know, I've used Roundup. You know, 20 years ago, I was enthusiastically spraying weeds. I was really excited about that. You know, cause I had this driveway that was paved with like white stone, and all these ugly
nasty weeds were coming up.
And then we found this amazing stuff called Roundup, and Roundup would just—it's
a
It would just—it was like whiteout for the weeds. And but what I noticed is if I got too close to the grass, I killed the grass. It was so effective. The grass on my lawn, you know, if it's got over there.
Right.
And I probably got a little exposed to it. You know, I tried to wash my hands and I tried not to inhale it. But, you know.
Stand downwind of it or anything like that.
But
Sure. We have to embrace the weeds in our lawns. Those manicured lawns, I think they look terrible. And weeds can also be beautiful. Think about wildflowers and daffodils and other such, you know, naturally growing stuff in abundance. They're not bad. You know, it's okay to have
some clover grass.
And so, we need a new aesthetic.
Yeah.
We need to embrace the weeds. We need to embrace weed. No, that's already happening with CBD. But
legalization of weed.
Right. Legalization of weed. We have to do things differently. But, you know, I believe...
Okay, so you're building a house. Are you going to have a lawn?
Not like that.
But you're going to have like...
No, not like that.
You're going to have turf.
Yeah. We're not going to... We're going to grow grass. We'll have sod, but we're not going to do any of those. We have to reconsider the tick thing, however.
Yes.
That's a separate conversation.
Yeah.
Because we live right... We butt up to a preserve.
I woke up this
morning... There's five deer back, right there.
I got to digress. I woke up this morning, and, you know, I open the email, and I get... The first thing that hits me is a picture of a tick on a skin, and it's from a relative of mine, and I won't mention the name, but it's like, I went to New Jersey, and I went to look at the flower garden, and I came back with this, and this is a nursing mother in my family, and the tick was on her skin, so she went to a local, this is a Sunday, I think, and she went to the local
urgent care,
and he, you know, they astutely said, the tick is not engorged. It looks like it hasn't adhered for too long.
Good.
And and I learned something from that, is that it actually takes 24 to 36 hours for a tick to stay on to transmit Lyme disease. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's less likely. The tick didn't appear flat, not swollen or engorged. Other tick-borne illnesses can be transmitted, but, you know, you can't really dose a woman who's breastfeeding with antibiotics.
Yeah.
And so the other question is, if you are being treated for Lyme, will you transmit Lyme disease to your baby?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. And
good. It doesn't transfer.
Nursing. You should not stop nursing.
Okay.
It's not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it can, Lyme disease can be transmitted from a mother who's infected to the baby in utero.
Okay.
So the baby can be born with Lyme disease.
Right.
That's very devastating. But not...
not through
breast milk,
thankfully.
Yeah. Wow. So anyway, so I had to do, you know, it's like, this is like, you know, 5:55 in the morning. I'm like my first consultation.
On a Sunday morning. Oh,
but
my gosh.
I offered reassurance and I said, you know, watch the site, because if it
bullseyes.
Develops and becomes a bullseye, then we have to treat.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And she's near She's near the end of breastfeeding anyway, so
okay.
That would be, you know,
that's
a
good.
Logical conclusion.
Yeah. But getting back to glyphosate, yeah, we have to stop using it altogether. It just has to stop being used. People who are getting Parkinson's, you know, all live in the city.
She couldn't use DEET going into the woods because that wouldn't be good for, she's breastfeeding.
Terrible.
I mean,
yes.
That's the worst possible thing.
Well, they're finding DEET still, even though it was banned in the 1970s? They still find DEET residue in placentas.
Yep.
In umbilical cords.
I don't know what you do, because if you really want to go into the deep woods and, you know, you have to occupationally, for example.
You have to wear a spacesuit.
You have to wear a spacesuit, or you have to
hazmat
apply something
suit.
Like DEET, because you can't just apply
right.
like,
you have
know,
to tuck your pants into
royal
your socks.
Oil or something like
I know,
that.
I know.
Work.
You can't walk around with a marigold bouquet or some other kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or citronella. It's not going to do the same thing. You
anyway.
Want to protect yourself. But glyphosate, we don't have to use. We could go out, we could pull weeds, we can embrace the weeds, we can grow other things that can keep the weeds out of the way. I am not a green thumb yet. I plan to become one, where I will become more learned
right.
in what kind of flowers and grasses are beneficial. And eco-friendly, we want native plants, we
right.
want to deter any kind, exactly. We want to help the bees, we want to do all of that kind of stuff.
All right.
So, you know.
Or you can do a photo essay on your organic
Maybe.
Garden, I mean, when it's done.
Yeah, when it's okay. done,
okay.
absolutely.
People, I mean, people are going to be curious, you're talking
yeah.
about this.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
great.
So.
Because right now, it's
yeah.
You live in Queens and you don't have a big
I don't have a garden.
Spread.
Exactly.
Do you have a flower pot on the fire escape?
Yes. No, on the front porch. I've got plants in my house. It's
okay.
fine. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Enough digression.
Yes. We have an email from Stephen. I'm inquiring about a male who has HPV virus for several years. He's in his late 30s and is doing well. He recently went to his doctor, who suggested he get the HPV vaccine. I'm under the impression that the vaccine was to prevent, not cure, the virus. As a friend, I'm worried that the vaccine could do more harm than good. Please advise.
Yeah, it's really speculative to give someone who has HPV the HPV vaccine. There are a couple of reasons why maybe it's plausible. One is that there are many strains of HPV.
Yeah.
And that he could acquire a more cancer-causing HPV.
Yeah.
You know,
that would be a reason.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
getting it.
Men, so what's the consequence with men? Well, A, men can transmit it to women, which
yeah.
ain't great. And,
yeah.
But there's no surety that with the vaccine, it's going to make it go away. It doesn't
yeah.
cure HPV. Mm-hmm. It may prevent you from acquiring HPV.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is some speculation that if you take the HPV vaccine, even after you have HPV, that it may prevent cancer somehow by modifying the HPV so the HPV is less dangerous. But that's not been proven or demonstrated. And, you know, that's a hypothetical. So
right.
I don't think there's a lot of percentage in taking it, especially given that
mm-hmm.
there are some downsides to the HPV vaccine. I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, this debate is becoming really toxic. You can't even talk about it, because it almost...
It's like vaccines and autism.
No, it's like treason to talk. It's like they want to string you up for anything that impugns the CDC mandated recommendations about vaccines.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually scary. You know, I've been attacked on Twitter by people who think I'm an anti-vaxxer. And I'm far from an anti-vaxxer. My family members, you know, I recommend that they be vaccinated.
Yeah.
But with certain caveats, and I have concerns, and I think concerns continue to be appropriate about the safety and risk-benefit of certain vaccines.
Yes.
So, and the HPV vaccine is one that is a little bit less clear in its risk-benefit value. That there are a lot of cases of, especially women receiving the vaccine, you teenage girls or pre-adolescent girls, getting the vaccine and getting sick. And getting sick in sometimes devastating ways. There have been very rare, but there have been some deaths attributed to it. And so I don't think it's
even though it's less common
to raise concerns about the vaccine. Maybe we can improve on it, perfect it. I have to say that there's a little more impetus to develop such a vaccine because we're seeing an alarming increase in oral cancers.
Yes.
You know, it used to be just cervical cancer, but
but not anymore. No.
It's like, you know, oral sex has become a death-defying act.
Right. You know, without a barrier,
Right.
Yeah.
It's a really scary thing. Mm-hmm. Because it can, you know, you can have transmission. Right. You know, it's a dilemma.
More oral cancers, more esophageal cancers, but more,
And, you know, in men who have sex with men or in, you know, heterosexual couples who have anal intercourse, there's the risk of rectal cancer.
As well. Rectal cancer, anal cancer as well.
Yeah.
That just reminded me of Farrah Fawcett. She died of anal cancer back when.
Okay.
Right.
And, you know, before the era of the awareness of the potential transmission by HPV, but it's conceivable that it was. I mean, the theory about most gastrointestinal cancers is that they are related to potentially to diet, you know, heterocyclic amines and, you know, that kind of stuff. But this risk factor is an infectious risk factor. But anyway, so enough said. I mean, I just don't know what to...
Don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the great utility in getting that... I mean, doctor wants to fix it, you know, has a tool in his hand and he wants to do something definitive, but it's not really clear that there's going to be a benefit. I mean, I'll be on the lookout for any information that suggests otherwise in the next few months, but they have not demonstrated... First, demonstrate that it's safe to give people who have HPV the vaccine. Okay, that part, they've kind of cleared that hurdle. But have they demonstrated that the people who have HPV, once they get the vaccine, they get less cervical cancer? They haven't demonstrated that. They have.
I didn't even know it was a thing until this question from Steve, that a vaccine was even considered after the fact.
To do that, it's like shutting the barn door if the horse gets out.
Right. So, interesting. Steve, thank you for this very thoughtful question.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Oh.
Now for a very interesting question.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been waiting for this one.
This comes from Christian. Dear
read
sir.
Read the whole thing.
I'm going to. Dear sir, madam, sorry if my English isn't perfect.
Where's he from?
From the Netherlands.
The Netherlands.
Yeah. 2 years ago, I've been initiated to start living on light. This is a healing process, after which a 9-day water diet follows. Since then, the end of 2017, I'm living on light, living without food since 2017. I want to be examined by professionals because I think it would be beneficial for modern science. Everyone can live without food if taken seriously and with the proper initiation. I could be monitored and under cameras 24/7. Do you want to research me or do you know others who will? This is from Christian. So what is Christian?
Thank you very much for thinking that I have the wherewithal to mount a project or documentary on breatharianism.
Breatharianism, yes.
But,
yes.
You know, I just don't have the resources to send camera crew and a research team to carefully monitor you and make sure that you're not sneaking out to get yourself a, some rice toffle in Amsterdam, which is, you know, a popular...
But just to give our listeners a little lesson on breatharians, breatharians claim to have the answer.
Well, first of all, this is a thing.
It's a thing. I didn't know it was a thing until this email. Wow.
It's a thing.
Breatharians claim to have the answer to this worldwide dilemma.
What are you reading from? What's the source?
This is actually from Science.
Science?
Yes. Science. From Science and How Stuff Works.
Oh, okay.
How Stuff Works. A group called breatharians claim to have the answer to the worldwide dilemma and to other food-related diseases. Stop eating.
Right.
Or rather, live off prana, which if you're a yogi like me, means your breath, which translates to life air, life force.
So it's not like they're becoming like, they're not photosynthesizing.
They're not photosynthesing. And I like that you say that.
Protoplasts in their skin. They don't turn green.
No. So breatharians believe that a person can give up food and water. You can't live without water. Altogether and live purely off prana, which they call living on light or living on the air. So very interestingly, an article from The Guardian quotes a Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
I sent you that article.
You did.
I said, let's prepare for this question. And I looked it up and I said, there's an article in Guardian. And it's the article is 5 years old. It's actually from 2013. So
You're kidding. This is the first time I'm hearing of breatharianism.
So I forgot. That The Guardian interviewed me about this phenomenon. So the quote here is that Dr. Ronald Hoffman, medical director of the Hoffman Center and host of a weekly health talk podcast, said, quote, that it was delusional to think you can escape the laws of biology. Plants have what are called chloroplasts that contain chlorophyll and they have the ability to capture energy from sunlight, Hoffman said. Humans don't have chlorophyll or chloroplasts. No humans do. It is impossible for a human to have that. Therefore, they have to derive energy from... I'm quoting Hoffman here.
You're quoting you, yes.
In The Guardian, which is a big paper. Therefore, they have to derive energy from external sources that can be either fat or protein or carbohydrates, but it can't be sunlight. Hoffman said if Shine continues to not eat food, her organs will eventually fail and she will die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well... is there any record of anybody, they talk about this person, and the person is like, Shine has lost 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who are claiming to be breatharians.
Like Christian, who emailed us from the Netherlands.
And it's certainly a way to attract a certain amount of notoriety by, I mean, it's... more going to get you more attention than if you wear like bright argyle socks. You know, you're a breatharian.
Yeah.
And there are people, there's sort of this yogic tradition, this kind of relates to Eastern religion where yogi adepts have done amazing feats of control.
Yes.
They bury them underground. They don't appear to require oxygen. They fast for enormous amounts of time. There was a 60 Minutes Australian program. 60 Minutes Australia did a experiment. See, 60 Minutes you do see this guy. there was a guy in Australia, and a doctor for the network noted that after 48 hours, this guy displayed symptoms of dehydration, stress, and high blood pressure. The network canceled the experiment after 4 days when this alleged breatharian's health continued to deteriorate. So I would have to say that I'm I think that this is not real.
Yeah,
I think that this is a...
I think it's a lot of hooey.
I think it's a fake. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this guy plans to arrange to be carefully scrutinized.
Uh-huh.
You know, with 24-hour camera work.
Right.
I'd like to believe that somehow he has transcended the laws of nature and has developed the ability to do this. And that, by the way, he says that you just need an initiation. You know, you can
and
do
then,
this.
And that's that. And you could live without food and water. You cannot live without water for much past a week. You will die.
I would say that this is a little bit of a risky thing.
Absolutely. Don't try this at home.
Because there are a lot of people who would just as soon do this. They have problematic relationship to food.
Yeah.
And they believe that just like celibacy, you can undertake, or sobriety, you can...
Let's right. just give up.
I mean,
food.
I gave up chocolate. Gave up alcohol.
I don't have to worry about foodborne illness anymore. I'll just stop eating.
Right.
My IBS will go away. I'll just stop eating.
I've
stopped. Terrible way to deal with
I've stopped
with
dating. I don't want these romantic entanglements, and I don't want to eat food anymore.
Right.
I just
So you that's know, that.
Put it down.
Yeah.
And through the learning a technique of pranic, maybe it's yogic breathing, I gather energy from the ether that surrounds me.
And
I don't know. I mean, I'm making fun of this. Maybe, you know, it's not respectful of this very earnest inquiry.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I think it's dangerous to even court the idea.
Yeah. That it is dangerous. And listen, there was
a lot of people with eating disorders who are in effect trying to do this.
Yeah. Foremost breatharian, Jasmuheen, formerly Ellen Grieve, is credited with starting today's breatharian movement. Her prana program advises followers to convert to breatharianism gradually, becoming a vegetarian, becoming a vegan, move to raw foods, then fruits, then liquids, and finally prana. You replace physical food with air and light, as well as metaphysical nourishment. Metaphysical nourishment.
It seems that there's sort of a hierarchy of, like, you know, we are eating, and it's sort of an impure endeavor that somehow anchors us to our animal nature or our constraints as biological entities, and we can actually transcend that.
We can transcend
become higher
that. Yes.
beings, because, you know, it's just a series of steps towards perfection, the perfection being no food at all.
No food at all. Okay. Good luck with your biology.
I mean, we see enough vegans with problems.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You know, just people who are too, like raw food vegans in an effort to minimize their dependency on food and on animal protein and, you know, keep a low carbon footprint. Yeah. And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Okay. Well, that was very interesting.
Fascinating digression. And you know, I don't know what to, you know.
I don't know either.
Let's do a GoFundMe to send a camera crew to Amsterdam. Netherlands to do a 24-hour surveillance on this guy for, you know, a month.
A month. And let's see. Oh, my. Okay. Well.
Media inquiries are invited.
Yes.
If anybody listening from, you know, Frontline or from 60 Minutes, please contact me. And, you know, and I'll volunteer to be the medical expert. I'll go.
Yeah.
I'm a medical nutritionist.
Yeah. That'll work. That'll work.
Hey, we got to pause because at this point we divide our podcast in two parts, and let's preview what we'll talk about in part two.
Okay. Why is my vitamin D still in the 20s? I've been taking 5,000 IU for the whole last year.
An interesting dilemma that we will take up in part two.
Yeah.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, but I bet you can't top that last one. Try. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.